You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Wednesday. We're halfway through the week here at the Locked On Pacers podcast. Today we're going to preview tonight's game against the San Antonio Spurs in San Antonio. It should be a good one. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. As Adam says, the man of too many titles, because I also write for a bunch of other places. And today, like I just said, we're going to talk about that Spurs game, and I'm going to continue the discussion from yesterday, or at least try to, that me and Adam had about Miles Turner. And for those of you that listened, you'll know that I might have described it poorly on Twitter, but it got very interesting because Adam was very down on him after the game against the Wolves Monday. But I'm going to do, last time on Monday, I did Kylo Quinn first and then Timberwolves preview after. Today I'm going to do Spurs preview first, Turner talk after. Mix it up, and you know, I wanted to talk about the Spurs first just because I have all their stuff in front of me, to be honest. So if you'll listen to Tuesday's show, We saw this wow, I just tripped on all my words. We saw in the middle of it, we started talking about the Spurs, and I looked down and I said, oh, the Spurs are smoking the Lakers right now. You know, classic Spurs to somehow be good when they have a roster of kind of disjointed pieces. And they're beating the Lakers in LA by 15. It was 31-16 at that point. Well, that game turned out to be awesome for those of you that were able to stay up. The Spurs won 143-142 in overtime, and they were down like five with about a minute to go. And they got Patty Mills scored, and Rudy Gay hit a three, and they just found a way to get it done after LeBron missed two free throws. It was a crazy game. It was such a Spurs win to like find a way to manufacture when they should have had anyway. I mean, the Spurs are just a machine. It's kind of crazy. And they're going to be tough to take down. Last year, if you'll recall, they played twice. The first, Kawhi Leonard did not play in either, which is a tragedy. I mean, I love watching Kawhi play. But that would have changed probably the results of at least one of the games. But it's not really fair to say that like swung anything, because not really any teams got to play against Kawhi. But if you'll recall, the first one was in Indianapolis. That was the Victor Oladipo game-winning three-pointer, the million-mile-in-the-air arc over LaMarcus Aldridge. Crazy shot. That was really Vic's first, like, I'm here, I'm clutch kind of shot. It was insane. And that one was a score of 97-94. And I'm getting to, there's a reason I said that score. The second time they played was in San Antonio. The Pacers won that one 94-86. So the highest score between all four possible scores for both teams in the two games was 97, and in the way the NBA has been this year, it's been a lot of 130s and stuff, except for the Pacers, who have been on the lower scoring end of stuff. And the reason for that is that these two teams are very slow this year. The Spurs are 30th in pace. I think the Pacers are 24th, but that could have changed by now because it could be a different... Oh my gosh, it's right in front of me. I'm dumb. Since the last time I checked, they're 22nd now. So this game is going to be a slog compared to these other NBA games this season, which will be so fascinating to see because, you know, in an era where math dominates, Greg Popovich finds unique ways to win. You know, he slows it down. He finds a way to manufacture good shots that aren't threes and layups. This game's going to be slow, and it's going to be about that kind of thing. Him and McMillan are going to go back and forth, get some Team USA coach bonding going on. I think it'll be a great game. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Spurs operate in this one in particular. But the intangibles for the Spurs, like I said, they're last in pace. They're third in defense and 17th in offense. They're just classic Spurs to be third in defense with this roster. You know, and before the season, everyone's like, oh, their defense will be bad. You know, they're running Mills, DeRozan, and Powell big minutes. They're running Rudy Gay big minutes. I mean, they got all these guys who, in theory, should be bad defenders somehow playing good D. Bryn Forbes playing big minutes, playing good D. They lost a bunch of good guys. Kyle Anderson was a good defender for them last year. Like, it just makes no sense, but it's working. And then the other thing that was beat down your throat about the Spurs all summer was they're going to suck at three-pointers. And guess what? They're first in the NBA in three-point percentage. They've hit 47% of them. That's completely unsustainable, absolutely. But they've done it so far pretty well. They find a way to manufacture good shots. It's just the way Pop and the Spurs operate. So you just have to keep an eye on this stuff for them. And here's going to be my key to the game. The four factors, I think it was Dean Oliver who came up with those, or who came up with. He didn't come up with the stats himself. He called them the four factors. It probably it could be not Dean Oliver. Anyway, the four factors for offense, the Spurs, their big one is turnovers. They never turn the ball over. They're first in the league with 7.7% of the possessions turning it over. Just so you know, the Pacers are at 14% and they are 24th in the league, which is very bad. So that is something to watch this game, because the Spurs take care of the ball and they have the slowest pace. So, you know, they have really long, grinded out possessions that are really well manufactured. And you have to stay home on D. You have to play your game to be able to stop them. And I think Miles Turner is able to play well. We'll talk about him later. Remember, Miles Turner is able to play well against the Spurs because of that. They don't have anyone who can stretch him out, really. I mean, Gasol's an all right shooter, but he's not so good that you're like panicking and you have to get out behind the 3-point line when you guard him. And they're currently starting LaMarcus at center, I believe. So, you know, they started Poeltl 2 games, so maybe they'll start Poeltl again. Either way, they don't have a stretch big, so Turner's going to be able to be around the basket. So they can manufacture these long possessions against the Pacers all they want. The challenge will be that they're not getting good shots at the rim if Turner's in the game. And this one will be key for Turner as well, is if he's able to be good, as I said, protecting the paint like that. The guards cannot get destroyed on screens. Collison has been bad about that this season so far, and that makes Turner have to react a lot, and he gets a lot of fouls that way. Some of them are he's just out of position, but I think he could have a good game defensively. And ever since the Marc Gasol game, people have been really talking about how good his D's been this year. I agree with all that stuff. He stonewalled Gasol a few times. It really got people watching. He's been great protecting the paint outside of those fouls. So I think this could be a good game for Turner. If he can even get out to 15 feet and shut down Aldridge a little bit out there, he could have one of the most spectacular games. And then he'll score 7 points and 3 rebounds. And you'll all tell me he had a terrible game, even though he played amazing defense and is not in a position to rebound because of the way he plays. Anyway, that's going to be one of my keys for defense, is because they're going to have so many slow possessions where they don't make mistakes. You have to protect the paint. You have to make their shots a difficult quality. DeRozan is just DeRozan. He's up to 29.3 points per game. He needed 14 assists in that Lakers game I referenced earlier. Popovich has him working more, not more, completely basically, as a ball-handling point guard who kind of initiates offense for them, more so than he did last year because of Kyle Lowry, which isn't wrong. It's just different now. And that makes him a little more threatening because, you know, you're a lot of times guys don't really cut a lot when DeRozan has the ball, and or defenders kind of turn and watch because they know he's going to shoot. Now you're in an instance where DeRozan can be a threat to pass, and you have to actually, like, be conscious of what's going on around you when DeRozan has the ball, especially in the Spurs. Again, I'm going to bring this up so many times. I feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over again, especially in this Spurs system where there's a lot of passes and cuts. DeRozan can thrive in that role, so you'll have to be attentive when he has the ball. Last year, we talked about this yesterday too. I disagree with Adam on this, so I'll say it when he's not here. I think Bojan defended DeRozan pretty well in a lot of the Raptors games, and Lance defended DeRozan pretty well. Lance is now gone, obviously, but Tyreek is good at a lot of the same things that Lance was good at on D, which is perimeter D. I don't know. Lance was a little better in the post D than Tyreek. Anyway, so I think that they can do okay defending DeRozan scoring-wise. But the trouble is, you know, it's a different DeRozan now that he's passing a bit more. You know, can they stay attentive in those situations? Do they not bite on his shot fakes that turn into passes? Like when guys go up in the air, they have to send help over. Well, he'll just dish now. Those are things you have to be mindful of. And another one, another key to this game besides DeRozan, stopping DeRozan and Turner, is going to be the bench. I thought the bench would just come out there, completely destroy the Minnesota bench, and I was completely wrong. That start of the fourth quarter, I guess it wasn't like so bad besides the start of the fourth, but that stretch was just horrible. It seemed a lot worse than 9-0 because it happened in the blink of an eye. The Spurs bench has some talented players. Patty Mills is a good shooter. He's a good ball handler. He's a good initiator of an offense. Marco Bellinelli, obviously a sniper, shooting 46% from three this year. Pau Gasol, really refined player. He's very slow, so he has weaknesses you can get around, but he's a very refined player, shooting well this year also. Davis Bertans is shooting well this year. 34, holy moly, I missed a number in his three-point percentage. It's 63.6%. I read it as 36 because I skipped the whole six. 63% on the year for Bertans. He's a really refined player, too. They just have a lot of good... Oh, and Dante Cunningham, who's okay at offense and defense. You know, they have a lot of okay bench players. It's going to be crucial to see if the Pacers can keep up. They have a pretty solid 10 guys in their rotation that are tough to stop, that are good at something. And I think, you know, the bench is going to have their hands full trying to both defend and score on this group. I mean, Poeltl's good on the glass. And Bertans is an okay defender, and Cunningham's an okay defender. I think guards on the bench are going to do well. I think Tyreek's going to have a nice game in this one, especially if he's guarded by Bellinelli. But it's going to be a tougher game for the bench to dominate, and I think it's going to be important for Nate to find ways to do it, especially after that Minnesota game. How I personally would do it is I think this is a great opportunity for Sabonis is going to look awesome in this game if Pau Gasol guards him, because he's so much quicker, Sabonis is, than Gasol. And Gasol's so slow that going at him in the pick and roll seems like a great idea. If Pau Gasol's in at the four, then maybe Leaf might play, which would be huge too, because you could do some pick and pops, maybe get Leaf open a little bit. But if not, you go small, have McDermott set some screens, have Pau chase McDermott if he's at the four and Poeltl's at the five. I just think that's a guy you should go at. I think that's how you can manufacture some offense after you run a set. And here's the thing, too, I want to address people. A lot of people on Twitter, for those of you not on Twitter, just skip this next 10 seconds. A lot of people on Twitter are saying, oh, they got to quit running the pick and roll. They do it so often. It's like, well, they run a play, and if the play doesn't work, then they do it. And it's a good secondary action. That's how it works. They should keep doing that. They should absolutely keep doing that. Anyway, yeah, it'll be a good one. Whoever Bellinelli's guarding would be the ideal ball handler. Go at Pau, too. If Bellinelli happens to be on McDermott and Pau's on the Sabonis, then a McDermott-Sabonis pick and roll it is. I think that it really would work. Those guys are not good on D at all. So that'll be fun to watch. And I think the Spurs' plan is going to be to just do what they always do. Keep it really slow. Don't turn it over. You know, get hit enough of the offensive glass and get your free throws up. That they'll be hard. They're always going to be hard to beat because they do those. They just do so many little things that over the course of the game makes it a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little bit closer. So, you know, it's worth watching how they do that and how the Pacers try to avoid getting caught into the lull of the Spurs machine in this game. Ultimately, though, I think the bench is not going to be as big of a factor, but I think the starters for the Pacers are a little better than the starters for the Spurs. They have different point guards all the time. But they don't have anyone to contain Vic. It's as simple as that. To beat around the bush this whole time talking about all this other stuff, I haven't said Victor Oladipo's name once. I mean, Bryn Forbes might be guarding him. Bryn Forbes, for all he is a shooter and a cutter. He's not a good defender at all. That could be a field day for Vic. Their best defender in their starting lineup. It actually depends. They've shifted their starting lineup so much. I think Poeltl will start at the five. Jakob Poeltl will. So their best starting defender might be LaMarcus Aldridge, which says a lot about the Spurs in general. So they can really do anything that they want to get Vic open shots. But I think this game they might experiment going to more of Collison as a ball handler like he was last year. Vic is the Collison off ball like he did last year. That suited him much better than they're having Vic go off ball more. And Vic's doing well off ball. But it's making Collison be worse and hurting spacing a tiny bit. So maybe they try to get Collison in a bit of a rhythm in this game if he is guarded by Bryn Forbes, starting point guard, / DeRozan. So it'll be fascinating to see how they do that, but the guards should be able to manufacture a lot of points for the Pacers. And I do think they win this one, and I thought Minnesota would be harder than most people. And look at that. It was. I'm not saying I'm always right because I've gotten a game wrong this year already. Anyway, I thought the Grizzlies would be harder for those of you that didn't know. Anyway, but I think they can win this one kind of handily just because they both play slow anyway, so they're kind of playing into the Pacers' hands, and they have good matchups all over the place. I bet the Spurs think they have good matchups too, which is totally fair, but you know, Thad can shut down their best scorer, second best scorer in LaMarcus Aldridge. Vic can play OKD on DeMar if needed. He won't even be on him probably. He'll probably guard Rudy Gay or Bryn Forbes. But anyway, I just think they have ways to get around all the things the Spurs are good at. And I think the Pacers will win this one. They'll get their first road win, and all of you can stop panicking about everything. But I'm excited to watch this one. I love watching the Spurs. They have so many good creative sets. They always make the extra pass. Things like that that matter over the course of a basketball game. They just love to do them. But I'm going to take a quick break and talk about this Turner stuff. It's going to be a shorter segment, but it's hot on the mind. So can't wait. Get ready. Here we go. Miles Turner stuff after the break. All right, guys. I'm going to take this break to talk to you guys about Blue Chew. You can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed using Bluetooth. So listen up, because I know it seems like an awkward topic, but everybody thinks about it from time to time. So just get with it. It's at bluechew.com. It's like the color blue. It's like chewing food. Bluetooth brings you the first chewable. It's an FDA-approved enhancement drug with ingredients that are similar to those of Viagra and Cialis. That's how you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night. You can take them on a full stomach. You can take them not when eating, since they're chewable. They work twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. And Blue Chew is prescribed online, and it ships—that's a funny Freudian slip for this ad read. And it ships straight to your door in a like kind of discreet little box thing, so no one really knows what you're getting. It's perfect. You don't have to go to the doctor. You don't have to wait in a pharmacy. It's not awkward. It's great. And they're made in the U.S., and they ship direct, so it's cheaper. It's great. And I have so many ands. You can get them for cheaper using our code here. Just visit bluechew.com. You get a free shipping if you use our promo code, which is CODE, C-O-D-E. That's a great promo code because it's literally right there where it says promo code. The word is in it. So just type in code. You'll get a free – I'm sorry. It's $5 shipping for a free shipment. I got that backwards. If you use our word CODE. So don't forget, it's C-O-D-E code. Let them know you came from us and enjoy it. Okay, so here is where we are at. I don't really have a great starting point for this discussion. It's very hard to come up with one. So there are impact stats. There are bunches of them for NBA players that tell you how impactful they're being on the court. That sounds too simple to be true, but that's what it is. I don't know what to use for small sample sizes. I wish I had PIPM up in front of me. There are a lot of impact stats out there I'll use PIPM, so I'll just keep rambling while I look this up. There are a lot of impact stats out there for all players in the NBA. You can use them to be in any way now. Like, there's a stat that can tell you whatever you want to see. PIPM, Jacob Goldstein's player impact plus minus, is my favorite impact stat. It just captures everything. Okay, Sabonis in PIPM this season is a plus 0.34, which puts him 93rd in the NBA. Kyle O'Quinn, who has been excellent in his minutes, cannot find his name for some. There he is, plus 0.54. So O'Quinn has been more impactful in his role than Sabonis has been in his. And Miles Turner is a plus 0.61. So let me tell you what that means. First, I want you to listen to this, okay? So the order of the Pacers centers, as to what I just told you, is Turner being the most impactful, O'Quinn being the second most impactful, and Sabonis being the third most impactful. Now, you can look at other stats that say different things than that. Vorp says that it's O'Quinn, Sabonis, Turner. WinShares for 48 says that it's O'Quinn, Sabonis, Turner. BPM says that Kyle O'Quinn is like one of the best players in the NBA this season. O'Quinn has been very good. But impact stats tell us that Turner is still being good. Like, people are freaking out because Turner is not this rebounder that you all want him to be. You set him up to be this guy who needs to be crashing the glass and all these things. But, like, Turner is not a rebounder, all right? Take him for what he is, as an impactful player who's not on the glass. Your post player does not have to be this rebounding guy. I mean, he's averaging 6 rebounds a game. Like, that's fine for what he does. He's so far away from the basket on offense that it's not his thing. On defense, he could get a few more, but he's going for these blocks. He's impacting shots. He's not in position for the rebound because he's stopped thwarting the shot at the basket, or, you know, he's doing something else. And the fouls are troublesome. That has been my biggest concern with him this year. But people who keep touting that he's not rebounding or being a man in the post and he's soft, it's like, what does that even mean? Like, I think that's the laziest argument I've ever heard in my entire life, is calling this dude soft. He's an NBA player. He leads the NBA in screen assists. He's setting great screens. He's popping out, which creates space for everybody else. He does actually roll a few times this year, and it's working. And he has made a few bunnies in the post. He's made that Dirk fadeaway against the Nets. Like, he's looked better in the post on offense than last year. He just doesn't do it that often. He's only taking 10 shots a game, and Adam said this yesterday, and it drove me crazy. Sorry, Adam, if you get to this rant. We had a good pot outside of this moment, but he's like asking why Turner's not scoring 20 points a game. It's like, why does Turner have to be? Why are you setting this expectation that Turner should be a 20-point-a-game scorer? He's 7th on the Pacers, and you should 7th at 20.6%. Okay, EK's on this list, and he only plays garbage time. So he's 6th in usage on this team, fine. he doesn't get the ball that much in total shot attempts per game. He is, I can't do math very quick. He's only taking 10 shots a game. Like, how is he going to score 20 points on 10 shots? That's incredibly efficient game. Victor Oladipo is barely scoring over 20 points a game. He's taking almost 20 shots. Like, you're setting up Turner to fail when you go into these games thinking he's going to dominate the post and score 20 points and grab 12 rebounds. That's not how Miles Turner plays. The stats say that he is impactful, and how is he doing it? He's doing it by spacing the floor, by being a beast protecting the paint, by setting great screens, by not turning it over very often. He's been a lot better at that this season, too, than last year, by the way. There's just, 8.3 turnover percentage. It's so low. That's the lowest of anybody who has a turnover on the entire Pacers team. The three guys below him, McDermott, Elise, and Edmund Sumner, haven't turned it over yet. Anyway, he's doing so many things well, but you're, so obsessed with him being this post guy who rebounds and does this stuff that he's just, that's not him, that you think he's playing poorly, and he's not. And here's the other thing about Sabonis and O'Quinn that I tried to articulate yesterday, and I'll try to do it again. The way the starting lineup plays with Turner's in the game is they run it through Victor Oladipo. I wanted to say Vic, and then I went with Oladipo. That sounded choppy. They run through Victor Oladipo and Collison more often because they're good ball handlers. They're good scorers. They can impact the game with the ball in their hands. So they run stuff through the guards, and they finish plays a lot because they have the ball in their hands. They have Bojan out there to finish plays, who usually is the second option. He's averaging 9 shots a game, which is the fourth most on the team. That's just how it's going to be for Turner. He's not going to get the ball as much because they're not going to create through him. Meanwhile, the way the second unit plays, Tyreke handles the ball sometimes, but he's not really a creator in the sense like he'll dribble and beat someone and make the defense collapse. That happens sometimes, not as often as it does with the first unit. They rarely have Corey Joseph initiate any plays. Instead, they run plays through the post. And shout out to Nick at Duan8_ for tweeting this at me because he agrees with me. And I'm paraphrasing his tweet in my head, but he agrees that you see Sabonis get the ball so much in the post and O'Quinn because the way the second unit plays is they play through those guys. They really actually play actively through the post. They set up these horn sets. They set up sets of the elbow to get these guys to be doing the things that they're the best at. In the same way they set up Turner to be doing the things he's the best at, which is screening and shooting from the outside and getting mid-range shots. Turner's long twos are annoying. That's a different story. Anyway. That's why it looks like they're better post players because they're getting more opportunities down there. They're rebounding. Yeah, Sabonis is a better rebounder. That is what it is. That doesn't mean he's a more impactful player or better with the starters. That means he's a better rebounder. Take that for what it is. And I don't think Sabonis should start because he'd be playing the Turner role in the starting five, and he's a worse shooter. He's a worse mid-range guy. He wouldn't be rolling, which is what he's really good at. He'd be popping, and then his passing becomes, he's an elite passer. He wouldn't be able to do that as much. Same with O'Quinn. And he's slightly a worse rim protector, which, given that Turner plays behind Bojan and DC, who get beat so much, and he has to save their butts at the post, Sabonis is worse at that. It just makes sense that to play Turner where he is. He's having a fine season doing the things he does well. Sabonis is having a fine season doing the things he does well. And now to circle back to what I started with for a reason. The reason they all have positive impact stats, right? The reason that every impact stat says they're a positive player is because impact stats measure how impactful you are in the role that you play, right? They cannot measure you in, they can't measure how good Miles Turner is as a point guard. They're measuring how good Miles Turner is at what he does on impact and winning. If Sabonis played Turner's role, I don't think his impact would be as high. If Turner played Sabonis' role, I don't think his impact would be as high. But they all have positive impacts, and that's the key takeaway. In their role, they're all positive players. And you can't change the role of three centers who are all positives doing what they do just because you think that some guy should be not soft or some guy should be rebounding more. Maybe change your expectations would be my thing for you Turner people. Like, he's not going to be this guy you expected him to be. He is very good at what he does right now. If all he is who he is now, he's maybe not the $18 million a year player. He's probably a $15, $16 million a year player. That's fine. He's really good at what he does. We have to treat him like that. You can't keep just setting yourself up to fail by wanting him to be this 20 and 12 guy. Like, that's, it's just not happening. But that is my rant. I think they're all three centers on the team are very good players. I enjoy watching all of them play basketball, and I think they're all very good at what they do. And I'm excited to watch them in the Spurs game because I think they all have a good matchup. And yeah, that was a long rant, but thank you guys for listening and tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Please debate everything I just said with me on Twitter. I love talking about this kind of stuff. Please debate me on it. It's fun, and I promise I'll respond. I try to respond to everybody unless you literally like cuss at me or something. But I'm on Twitter at TEASTMBA. That's TEASTMBA. And this podcast is on Twitter at LockedOnPacers. You can tweet at us there too. We sometimes reply on the account if it's a question to both of us. And leave us a review on iTunes if you feel so inclined. It helps us, which is nice. But you don't have to. I mean, I would just appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. But yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. Well, Adam will be back tomorrow to recap Spurs and I think talk a little Cavs. I'm not really sure. He'll probably talk Cavs Friday, but he's doing the next two episodes. So I'll see you guys next week myself. But thank you guys for tuning in and have a great rest of your day and week.